host Amnesty International and Bill Schultz, who runs Amnesty International, to which I used to donate money because I really believed it was a wonderful organization. And then they kept sending flyers about implying that Israel was a fascist state, or that somehow Israel was more to blame, or that Israel was a really bad place. You have ever looked into Amnesty International, which gets quoted on CNN constantly?
All the time. Okay, that's an excellent question. All right, Amnesty International used to be a good organization, as did the ACLU. All right, they used to be very, very good watchdogs, and they were fair. Both organizations have been hijacked by the left. Now, ACLU and Amnesty International. Amnesty International came out this week and said, the United States is the cause of almost all of the human rights violations. It's a bunch of crap. It's a bunch of garbage, all right? Not that we're perfect and pristine here in the USA. We are not. But our intent to liberate people in Afghanistan...
This nonsense about Amnesty International and the ACLU have been hijacked from by the left. The left of what? First of all, here you have a situation where in this day and age, any organization or group that claims it's an organization that is not coming down full throttle on the U.S. empire and where it's leading the world in the environment, in social deprivation, in the prison industrial complex, in the healthcare system, in its imperial wars, is none other than a propagandist for the machine. And then you have the nerve to talk about how you don't like the fact that they've mentioned some of Sam's imperialist deeds of violence throughout the world. No, I guess Abu Ghraib and torturing people and, you know, expediting them out to other fellow terrorists like in Egypt and all of that, I guess that's all par for the course. Well, here's the comeback. Slave time. Listening to 103.3, 101.1, the Skid Mark in Santa Cruz, 106.7, Illinois, LUBER.com, The World, 107.5, Nashville, in North Carolina, and RadioForAll.net, the universe. Click into the Slave Web, Google Slave of Old Radio, find out what time it is. Tonight, we're going to explore an aspect that is deeply entrenched in the Americana lexicon, in the corporate media and elsewhere. Basically, pig talk. We'll deal with it from there. So we got all that and a hell of a lot more on 103.3, Slave Revolt. know what time it is. Shameless file time. And tonight, what we're going to deal with is some pig talk in the age of America's disintegration. You know, as the Imperial War wages out of control for Sam, as he clamors over resources, bargains with other satanic regimes like himself, Sudan, Saudi Arabia, dollarism, oilism, capitalism. It's quite interesting how most of the rhetoric that goes on within most of these purveyors of deceit is based off of a kind of moralistic atonement type of quality that they use to justify the overall empire's stance. But when you go beyond the veil of the weakness of their own positions on those pitches, you see that even internally, they're full of hypocrisy. Most everyone knows that Rush Limbaugh was exposed as a fat, sloppy, filthy, wasting drug addict, and that he shamelessly now is playing victim. But we're going to explore how this individual comments on other people with drug problems, like former baseball star Daryl Strawberry. So let's see how this pig, in the age of American disintegration, shamelessly puts out his analysis on how people with drug problems should be dealt with, even though he himself is a little crackhead. Check this out.
Lives and works in baseball, where this is the basic rule of thought, is that this is a sickness, and we've got to bend over backwards to help these people and so forth. Daryl Strawberry has everything life could ever want, and he's earned it. He's got riches and so forth. And people say, well, you know, he just can't handle the pressures and the fame and the performance expectation. Well, I know a lot of people who are successful. I know a lot of people who are rich and rose to fame rather quickly and have to deal with performance pressures. They don't turn to drugs. On the other hand, you got people over there who, well, you know, poverty is causing crime, and poverty is causing people to look into drugs. Stuff, and this is all symptomatic of what we in this country do. We're trying to make a victim out of everybody, absolve anybody of responsibility, and that's just absolutely wrong, because the people who play by the rules are the ones on whose backs the burden of supporting these losers falls. And it's about time it came to a screeching halt.
This is amazing. Here, Fat Boy is talking about the people who play by the rules. The burden falls on them because they end up supporting these losers. Meanwhile, he's all drugged out himself. But he's pushing out this myth of this go it alone, you know, what you whining about, especially if you have fame and fortune, no excuse for pressure or for poverty. And those of his ilk play on that to the tilt. Slime balls like Rush Limbaugh use that as a way of projecting out the type of particular politically correct right-wing moral compass. In other words, it's the image that they project. It's not about how they live their lives. You know, so Boy George could be a little punk coward, all drugged out during the Vietnam War, but then he could put on his little cowboy boots, talk all this macho stuff, execute a bunch of people in prison while he's the governor, put a scowl on his face, and march a country off to war under the guise of being a crusader against terrorism, even though he lied his behind off to justify this adventure in the first place. But he's supposed to have a moral compass in the same way that Rush is. And since we're in the age of pig talk, where these charlatans can put out these false images, the fact that they're all full of pig manure, all full of hypocrisy, seems to go by the wayside. And then a fat boy talks about how, you know, for Strawberry, people bend over backwards to help them and help these people. Help these people. Most of the people who are in American prisons are there for drug-related reasons. So this is not a society that is bending over backwards to help people with drug problems or people who just like using recreational drugs in general. This society is 4% of the world's population, yet has 25% of the incarcerated. The most on the planet. So what is he talking about? He's just talking pig talk. Right now, though, the piglet has the nerve to be fighting against people looking into his medical record. So he wants people to bend over backwards to look the other way. But see, all of this type of rhetoric that he's about helps in Sam's organic internal crusade against black people. It helps push through tougher and tougher drug laws. It helps then catapult in draconian laws like what this fool here in Oakland, Jerry Stonewall Jackson Brown, is trying to push through with the curfew laws. Everyone knows how these curfew laws are going to be used. In the same way that the drug laws are used primarily. In the same way that the war on guns and, you know, war on crime wars and laws are used against the undesirables. But this is how this is how things have disintegrated in this society, where these pigs just pig talk their way into these particular issues. Now, here's Limbaugh yapping about the personal choice of drug abuse. So check this out.
Make the choice to grab a substance, put it in your nose or in your veins, that's going to cause you trouble, maybe kill you. That's not society doing it to you. That's not the rigors and pressures doing it to you. That's you doing it. Whether it's a weakness or whatever else, it still is a personal choice that those people, and we lionize these people, they get cured, and oh, what a great person he is. Look at this drink they used to overcome all this. We're just creating role models out of the wrong people in this society. And here are two examples.
Now, in the background was his little diddle heads, you know, clapping and stuff. And Locke goose step behind him. Now, when Limbaugh gets caught with a crack pipe up his behind, they in lockstep flip flops. And all of a sudden, it was an emotional issue. And where was people's emotional sympathy towards Limbaugh? Or why were people hammering him back? Here's someone who spent who spends his whole life crushing on people for his particular political gain. And then when he gets caught with manure in his mouth and is garbling out obviously filth, because everyone sees it spilling out in all of his hypocrisy, his diddle heads expect a sympathetic ear. I mean, this is just shameless, but it also exposes how ideologically set many people are in this disintegrated society. This is not about truth. This is about power and maintaining power and inclusion and exclusion. And these pigs tap in to that deeply biased, chauvinistic, racist, homophobic, and sexist aspect. right within the American population and drive it forward with all of the class implications. Now, there's this one baseball player to show you how these guys kind of go hand in hand. He's a close compatriot of Boy George. And at one time, he was on one of Boy George's teams when Boy George owned a baseball team. He's one who plays up the whole aspect of America the Great. Just put your nose to the grindstone and everything will work out. None other than Rafael Palmeiro. Now, Jose Canseco accused Palmeiro of sticking some needles full of steroids up his behind. And this is what Palmeiro had to say in front of the congressional committee that called him and other baseball players forward. Check it out.
My name is Rafael Palmeiro, and I am a professional baseball player. I'll be brief in my remarks today. Let me start by telling you this. I have never used steroids, period. I do not know how to say it any more clearly than that.
The British government has...
So, here Palmeiro, you know, is saying he doesn't know how to say it any more clearly than that. He got back and forth with, went back and forth with Canseco, calling him a liar. Actually, at one time, was acting like he was going to sue Canseco. Or, you know, Canseco had the little book, tell-all book. Basically, Canseco went broke, getting silly with his money after he was out of baseball. Life went down the drain. He's always been bitter about how his career finished up, so he said, now I'm going to get back at these guys. So now he decides he's going to play the rat game and start ratting on them. So the Congressional Committee, Congress, decides that this is an issue to, one, distract the masses of people from, but also to play their moralistic game in the same way that Rush Limbaugh does. You know, this self-righteous, this is something that they can focus on. Now, the fact that you have a situation where a number of cops have been caught with steroids up there behind, a number of cops have been involved in illegal activity, shootings and otherwise, while jacked up on roids, seems to fall by the wayside in this disintegrated society. In other words, it's more important to get the roids out of some athlete with a baseball bat in his hand than it is to get the roids out of the system with someone with a gun in his hand, especially since that person with a gun in his hand is a fighter for the state. So this is how warped things are in this society. Some of these websites actually have cops talking about the cycles they take. These are SWAT and other cops. How much they could lift before they went on roids, how much they could lift now, all this crazy type stuff. Yet, there was no call, quite naturally, by the Congress of all these different police Gestapo units in front of the TV screen and in front of Congress to hear what they have to say about putting in some kind of stricter, or in some many cases, some laws at all for testing for steroids. Not that we would expect them to. This is just how the way it is played when you are dealing with pig talk. So you have the pigs in Congress talking all this pig talk and diversionary talk to, you know, a pig like Palmeiro, who was playing this self-righteous role. You know, he's always pounded his chest about being a hard Republican, you know, a proud advocate of the American dream, you know, the whole little bit and stuff. But Palmeiro has just gotten suspended for 10 games. Why? Roy's up his behind and all through his system. So in the same way that you just heard Palmeiro with all this self-righteous indignation, and, you know, it was so convincing for the other pigs because they know they're all putting on an oinky performance, that Palmeiro was named to the congressional committee that would help work to clean up the sport. So after he gives his little performance, the other pigs in Congress become so impressed by a performance, they ignore the possible evidence. He puts on the proper performance with the little suit and tie and all of that, with the stern face, you know, the hand on the Bible, and then voila, he's off helping guard the pig pen. So Boy George called Palmeiro his friend, and said, quote, "He testified in public to being clean, and I believe him, still do," unquote. This is after Palmeiro gets caught. Now, it shouldn't be too surprising, I guess, after a pig like Boy George still wants you to believe him about his integrity of weapons of mass destruction and all of that other type of stuff. You know, here all these Downing Street memo stuff has come out. But see, these are pigs oinking in the age of American disintegration. This is how sick things have gotten. Now, this whole aspect has also taken on another tone because, as I said before, you know, Palmeiro and Canseco ended up on the same team. And Canseco talked about in his book, Juiced, that's what he shamelessly called it, about going into the holy cheeks of Palmeiro amongst other people. And at the time, they were on none other than Boy George's team. And this was a Texas Ranger. And Canseco, in the book, says that Boy George, quote, "most certainly knowing, unquote, that the players were on juice." So Canseco was basically indicting Boy George. So the pig juice is just flying all over the place. So this is in part why also Pig George wants to pretend that no, ain't nothing wrong, you know, Palmeiro is a good guy, and all have been about crucifying Canseco. But as you can see, many of these people want you to be blinded by not only the steroid juice, but the pig juice that they splash about. But to show you the similarities of one pig to another, from Palmeiro to Boy George, here's Boy George doing what his former employee, Palmeiro, did to the American public, but only about weapons of mass deception.
The British government has learned that Saddam Hussein recently sought significant quantities of uranium from Africa.
Those famous words. Now this, of course, was after him and others had been told that the country of Niger was not in any way involved in selling or transporting uranium to Iraq. They knew it. But this led to more pig juice flying all over, because after Joseph Wilson, who saw this and knew that Boy George was lying, wrote an article exposing it, then Karl Rove got up on his high horse, well, high pig, and he started to ride off on his fellow pig countrymen, you know, like Robert Novak, and leaked stories to him and others in an effort to out Valerie Plame, Joseph Wilson's wife. So here you have, see, Palmero could be a good politician. That, you know, in the same way that Boy George went from baseball to national politics in this age of American disintegration, Palmero could too. The fact that you're a liar or a beast, you know, what difference does that make? Or he could be a corporate hatchet man like Rush Limbaugh or Michael Savage or the clown I blew up in the beginning. It's all the same. They're in the art of deception. These are pigs. But now, to go on to another pig, let's hear Boy George's pig brain, none other than Karl Rove. And let's see what he had to say about leaking Valerie Plame's, you know, Valerie Plame, the CIA terrorist. Let's see what he had to say about leaking her name to the corporate media. Now, this was August of 2004. Check the pig out.
I didn't know her name and didn't leak her name. This is at the Justice Department. I'm confident that the U.S. Attorney, the prosecutor who's involved in looking at this, is going to do a very thorough job of doing a very substantial and conclusive investigation.
This is just shamelessness all around. Because now even Rove's lawyer admits that it came from Rove. All these dudes do is lie. It's just one lie after another, one pig after another. And if you look through the spectrum, though, incredibly, all these different pigs have reached different hierarchical statures within the American population in their particular fields. They're all liars, but they all are supposed to have high credibility in their particular field. Limbaugh, rated as one of the top, you know, radio personalities. Liar, a pig filled with filth. Palmero, the holy thumper of the Bible, stand-up Republican guy, baseball player with moral credentials, role model, a liar. Boy George reaches the height of presidency. Another pig in a trough lying. And Karl Rove, even raggedy Democrats admit that even if Karl Rove were to lose his present job, he would be hired overnight. And many people who would try to hire him would probably be Democrats, because they like his particular ability to win. There's no morality to any of this. They're all on the same team. They all serve the same class master. They're just fighting to see who serves them. So if they have to stab each other in the back and lie and all of that, and, you know, at the end of the day, both sides need Karl Rove, because both sides distort and lie and deceive the masses of the population in this country and throughout the world. So here, this pig, Karl Rove, is talking about, I didn't know her name or leak her name and all of this type of stuff, when we know just the opposite. But to show how the politics of pig outrage really in some parts know no bounds, here's Karl Rove's friend, another pig, Robert Novak, from the corporate media government hack outfit called CNN. Let's check out how this pig recently got his little pigtails pinched and went off oinking into the sunset.
He's got a show in his right wing that he's got back on. You know, I'd like to watch him. I hate that. To hear me, but you have to. He's got a show in his right wing that he's got back on. You know, I'd like to watch him. Wall Street journalist, tall pages watching you, show him your tough. Well, I think that's bull. I hate that. Just like golf. So Novak gets mad because his little companion chastises him of trying to look tough, you know, he has to look tough in front of Wall Street minions that, you know, watch the show and stuff.
So Novak gets all upset, gets his little hoofs in a bunion, and throws off his mic, swears on the set, and then walks off. Now, whether Novak stomped out to avoid the question, questioning about role that he knew was coming, it's hard to say. Or whether he's just starting to break down a little bit because he's feeling the heat by the pressure that the CIA is putting on to continue to push this issue, who's to say? But what's fascinating is that the CNN spokeswoman, Eddie Emery, called Novak's behavior inexcusable and unacceptable, quote unquote. This is after Novak apologized to CNN, and then CNN apologized to his viewers. And then she said, quote, "We've asked Novak to take some time off," quote unquote. So, but what's fascinating about this is that this is what causes Novak to be asked to take some time off. Not the leaking of the memo of the information of Plain's name. Now, personally, as you all know, I don't care that they leaked the name. Hopefully, many people were able to track down some of her CIA associates, and they got their ass shot off in some distant country. That's all good. I ain't got no problem with that whatsoever. My my whole point is that here these guys, they set up all of their particular laws, and then they flagrantly use these particular laws to chastise and try to bind people up into emotional turmoil or physical turmoil. Russ Limbaugh with the drug issues and laws. Palmero with his right, self-righteous stance on steroids. And on and on. You know, and then the way Novak plays his game out and stuff. Yet, in the corporate media and their particular standard and how they use the FCC to neutralize other voices on the air and so on and so forth, yet they get caught ass out violating laws. Novak gets caught ass out of violating these laws. Those laws concerning the CIA and leaking names, that basically came out after Philip Agee, a former CIA guy, wrote a book inside the company and exposed a lot of the things that the CIA was up to on the under throughout, on the down low throughout the world. And it caused some heads to roll of the CIA members. So the CIA were all up in an uproar, and they drafted particular, or got politicians to draft certain laws about serious repercussions taking place if you were to knowingly release the name of a CIA personnel. But here these guys, in a pig fight amongst one another, you know, Joseph Wilson, Karl Rove, the war on terrorism role, and all of that type of stuff, they get their little hooves in a bunion. Someone steps on their pigtail, they get the squeaking and hawking and oinking and stuff, and get upset. So then they start violating the particular laws that if it had been some regular person, they would have been chopping their head off. In the same way that if Palmero had been like a strawberry type of individual, you would have saw the same type of outward backlash, you know, by the Rush Limbaughs and by the Boy Georges that you heard Rush Limbaugh give towards Strawberry. But see, since Palmero plays the role of the, you know, Christian Bible thumping, righteous Joe guy, then they slide off of him in the same way that the rest of them are trying to slide away from their hypocrisy. Limbaugh and all. This is the age of pig talk. And this is the way the game is consistently being played out. Now recently, there's an incident that's going on where various reggae artists who are into playing a homophobic game, you know, talking all this smack about homosexuals, have found themselves into a battle with certain individuals in the gay rights movement. Now, it is a real punk-ass thing to do, to be running around with all these little weak lyrics about beating down gays and all of that type of stuff. And it's kind of part of the lowest common denominator that a society is in. But I saw an East Bay Express article where it was titled Beanie Man Catches Fire. Beanie Man was recently in Berkeley at the Shattuck Down Low for a couple of nights, and basically Outrage, which is a gay rights organization, has had a lot of has been putting forth a lot of stuff to get shows canceled by reggae artists. Here's some of the stuff that the article says, and we'll go into some of this stuff. It goes, Outrage's media-assisted propaganda campaign dubbed, quote, Stop Murder Music, whipped its supporters into a zealous frenzy. Beanie Man, for one, was compared to both Osama bin Laden and Hitler by dredging up inflammatory quotes from old or obscure songs and insisting that the artist be investigated for attempted murder. This strategy proved highly effective, resulting in a flurry of canceled shows. Among them, Beanie's scheduled appearance at Miami's 2004 MTV Music Awards, his entire UK tour, and a San Francisco date last September. The lost concert revenues cost dance hall artists $5 million in Britain alone. This February, with considerably less fanfare, Outrage officially called off the campaign after a precedent-setting meeting with Jamaica's government officials and reggae industry execs. The government is now considering, quote, comprehensive hate crime legislation, unquote, says Outrage Peter Thatchell. While the record label have declared a moratorium on anti-gay lyrics on internationally released albums, Thatchell insists that he resorted to an economic boycott only after a decade of unsuccessful political lobbying. Quote, money talks when morality doesn't, unquote, he says. Quote, our campaign has generated the biggest debate in Jamaican history on the issue of gay human rights. So it goes on to some of the other type of stuff, you know, that they've been doing. Now, it's pointed out that, you know, while some of the advocates in Thatchell's organization and stuff have claimed that this music has inspired a lot of the violence amongst gays in Jamaican society. It turns out that a large number of gays who are beat down in Jamaica, it happens by the police. And there hasn't been a correlation between the police acting a fool, like police do, all throughout the world, and it being inspired by the music, as opposed to just by these types of deprived societies and stuff, including like this one, where rape and other forms of sexual violence is used against other human beings. You know, sexual rape is used as a tool by police officers and guards in prisons, etc., etc. Now, these guys didn't really have a response for this type of stuff as far as, you know, the type of stuff that goes on within particular societies in general. But then I decided to, kind of look into some of the stuff that has been going on with Beanie Man and some of these organizations. And I came across a thing where it says, "Reggae star under police investigation. Beanie Man's album launch marred by threat of prosecution." And then it goes into how, some of these little police are meeting with top at a top level meeting with senior QC, follows a 9-month police investigation instigated by the gay human rights group Outrage. The police and a CPS meeting takes place the same day as Beanie Man's new album Back to Basics is released in the UK by Virgin Records. This was in 2004 of August. Outrage has protested to Virgin Records and its parent company, EMI, over the signing and promoting of Beanie Man. And they condemn him for what they say is the execution, quote-unquote, of gay people. They say that despite his so-called apology, these incitements to murder songs are still selling and Beanie Man is still profiteering from his murder music, quote unquote. And they say that, quote, "Inciting murder is a criminal offense. Free speech does not include the right to encourage the criminal act of murder," unquote. So this is how they're approaching it in the music, saying that this is murder music. This is what this guy is all about, and others like him. So you all need to indict him for a murder charge. Now, as I was going through this stuff on about Satchel and what these guys are up to, I then came across the fact that they had a little thing with Eminem. And what they said about Eminem was, Eminem promotes prejudice. His homophobic jibes make bigotry cool and acceptable. Now, they go into his raps, talking about Eminem. His rap, "Kill You," warns, quote, "You faggots keep egging me on till I have you at knife point when you beg me to stop," unquote. And then the track on Remember Me, Eminem goes into this, "F that, you faggots can vanish to volcanic ash and reappear in hell with a can of gas and a match." And then it just goes on and on, where basically Eminem's just talking smack and doing the little, path of least resistance of bashing gays and stuff like that. But then Satchel steps in and says, "The Grammy and Brit Award judges are two-faced hypocrites. They would never give airtime, let alone an award nomination, to a singer who fantasizes about murder of black people, unquote. Well, most of these little prankster gangster rappers out nowadays fantasize about killing other black people. And since their main core audience, since the majority of the people are not black, you could see in a warped up society and world where basically people fantasizing and actually carrying out killing black people kind of goes hands in hand. But then he goes on where Thatchell says, if Eminem rapped about killing blacks, cutting their throats, suffocating them in the boot of a car, and dumping their bodies in a river, he would be hounded out of the music industry. By nominating him for an award, the judges are signaling their toleration of misogyny and homophobia, unquote. Basically Eminem would just be another punk gangster rapper playing playing in a field that is acceptable. Then they, Thatchell says, Eminem's abusive depiction of women and gay people looks like a tactic endorsement of queer bashing and domestic violence. He has never attempted to distance himself from his hateful lyrics. It is all just an exploration of dark fantasies. Why doesn't he come out and say so? It is significant that he has declined requests to condemn hate crimes against women and gay people. And goes, he plays at being a macho bad boy who dares to break the rules, but he doesn't cuss black people or rap about being killed or about rap about them being killed. He's a coward who picks on easy targets, women and gay men. So instead of, so it's almost like Thatchell's hoping or trying to egg Eminem on to rap about rapping against the black folks and stuff. But when I looked through all of this type of stuff, what I found interesting was that they didn't have a campaign against Eminem. Even though they admit that, quote, 80% of aggressively, or they say that most of his songs have some, this is them saying it, most of his songs have a reference about, you know, attacking either women or gays. So they're saying that his music is overwhelmingly anti-gay or women at the very least. Yet, they come after all the fire, with Beanie Man and, some of these other cats, you know, in the little, you know, reggae dance hall type thing. But they don't do that in when it comes to the issue of they don't do that in the issue of Eminem. So in the same way that it's no doubt that many of these little rappers and all of that type of stuff are doing a little weak path of resistance. You know, in other words, you have a pigged out society that preys on vulnerable people, black people, women, gays, certain minority groups, etc., etc. These artists play off of that type of stuff because they know that in a disintegrated society that is in a free-for-all and a free-fall of moral decline, that they can get some movement there. So they play that aspect out and stuff. And then you have a situation where they get some headway, you know, in making lyrics that way and all of that type of stuff, doing all the posing and so on and so forth. Now, Thatchell and them say that they're against this type of outrageous behavior. And when Negroes in the little reggae world do that type of stuff, they come out full throttle and they brag about how, like, Puma threatened the particular reggae artist to, you know, pull back on endorsements and stuff like that, and how they were able to undermine all these tour dates. Yet here Eminem, who's one of the most popular pop artists out in the world at this present time, he's been doing the same thing for years, and there's no campaign whatsoever to try to boycott Eminem. Now, if it's really a principled issue, which is my whole point, then for these guys, it should be across the board. It reminds me of the issue of like many of these women magazines, white women basically magazines, which were going crazy on issues like OJ and using the OJ issue as domestic violence or incidents where with Mike Tyson for domestic abuse and rape and et cetera, et cetera. And when someone looked into it and saw that in their particular ethnic groups, Italian, Jewish, you know, all on down the line, the spousal abuse rate was just as great percentage-wise or higher than in the particular groups that they fantasize talking about and holding up as the archetype. A number of the women groups and magazines and women who work for those magazines admitted that if they were to come out and start talking about domestic abuse in the Italian community or Jewish community and all of that, there would be a backlash by the white men, many of whom own many of those women magazines, like Ms. Magazine and stuff. So they go after the target of least resistance. It's a cowardly move. So it's no doubt that my point is that, you know, all of this little attacking gays in your little songs and all that weak stuff, not attacking the state, you know, you're going to attack the gays and women and all of that type of stuff. There's no doubt that that's just a little punk weak move. But you see how race ends up playing a factor even in that, because the people that they go after full throttle is racially coded. In the same way that many of these white women organizations latch on to the OJs, the Tyson type issues, but ignore the ones, the Sean Connerys, who says if a woman is getting raped, oh no, actually that was Bobby Knight who said if a woman is getting raped, she might as well sit back and enjoy it. And Sean Connery was the one who said that every once in a while you got to slap a woman, you know, keep her in line, you know how that is. So here you have, when these little cowards talk all this type of stuff, and they weren't rapping about it in the song, you know, this is what they felt, you know. And these were grown adult men, old men, making these statements. You see a pullback in response. So the whole racial hierarchical issue takes place. Now, I thought that that was basically going to be it on that particular issue.
As you listen, think back.
Now, I thought that that was basically going to be it concerning, you know, those types of issues on that, concerning, you know, Fatso and the outrage group and so on and so forth. And, felt that, you know, exposing this path of least resistance is just a pig game. But then I came across the thing in the East Bay Express where it said that now Peter Thatcher is putting a lot of his time into exposing that Malcolm X was gay. I'm like, what? What the hell is this? What the hell is going on here? Now, so I said, all right, now, here we go again. So let me look into this. So I look into this, go back to Thatcher and all of this stuff, and I see this article by Thatcher, Peter Thatcher, Malcolm X, Gay Black Hero. On Malcolm X's 80th birthday, Peter Thatcher reveals the hidden gay past of the American Black Nationalist leader. So I go on. Now, I know the average brother and sister hasn't even heard of this particular one. But here's how some of this particular article goes. And then, of course, we're going to take it from there. Malcolm X was born 80 years ago today on, which was May 19th, 1925. But amid the commemorations, controversy is brewing. Some black activists are enraged by suggestions that their hero might have been gay or at least bisexual. The controversy has been stirring since the publication of Bruce Perry's acclaimed biography. Now, Bruce Perry wrote this biography in, it was like 91 or 92. I think it came out actually in 92, but it may have been 91. But, it was supposed to have been based on interviews with Malcolm's closest boyhood and adult friends. And Perry suggests that the U.S. Black nationalist leader was not as robustly heterosexual as his Nation of Islam colleagues have always insisted. And it goes on to say that Perry's book documents Malcolm X's many gay experiences. A schoolmate, Bob Beebe, recalls the day they stumbled on a local boy jerking off. Malcolm Beebe recalled, ordered the youth to masturbate him, and subsequently boasted he had given him oral sex. Later, from the age of 20, Malcolm had sex with men for money, as hinted at in Spike Lee's 1992 biopic, and he had at least one substantiated sexual liaison with a man while living in Flint, Michigan. His roommate noticed that instead of sleeping in the room, they were sharing Malcolm sneaked down the hall to spend the night with a gay transvestite named Willie Mae. Now,
and then
a lot of this type of stuff, when you hear this type of stuff being said, it's really incredibly hard to substantiate the validity of all of this particular stuff, because it happened, or supposed to have happened, so long ago. And you also have the situation where none of this stuff is really something that you can corroborate. Now, everyone know, or most people know, that Malcolm was in a particular stage in his life where he was doing all kinds of despotic stuff, you know, dealing drugs. He was in his Detroit Red stage, where he was pimping and doing anything for money and all of that. And Perry says, quote, there were other ways he could have earned money. Dope dealing, thieving, and pimping were sources of income he had pursued with success. There was no imperative to sell his body. Why then did he prostitute himself? Misogyny and repressed homosexuality might have been the answer. So according to Perry, quote, his male-to-male encounters, which rendered it unnecessary for him to compete for women, afforded him an opportunity for sexual release without the attendant risk of dependence on women. Well, Malcolm, during that whole period, was an exploiter of women. It wasn't so much of a dependence on anything other than other human beings that he was willing to exploit. So here you see these guys making particular jumps and going, was Malcolm X gay, bisexual? In his school days, he was apparently a passive participant. Others masturbated or filleted him, you know, on and on and on. And later, while working as a male prostitute, he took a more hands-on role in sex, especially with linen. So, generally, it's a situation where, on a certain level, it's so hard to really get corroborating stories on this, that it's hard to really try to verify this particular stuff, but it becomes clear where Satchel's coming from in the end, where he goes in the end part. Quote, had he not been assassinated in 1965, almost certainly at the hands of NOI rivals, Malcolm might have eventually, like Huey Newton of the Black Panthers, welcomed the gay liberation movement as part of the struggle for human emancipation, instead to serve its homophobic political agenda. For 50 years, the NOI has suppressed knowledge of Malcolm's gay past. Now it is time to blow the whistle. There is not a single world-famous black person who is openly gay. Young black lesbians and gays need role models. Who better than Malcolm X, one of the inspirations of my activism and one of the great modern heroes of black liberation? All right, so one, that kind of tells you what you need to know, what's kind of behind this particular thing. Because let me address a couple of points. One, Malcolm, when he left the Nation of Islam, was in a bitter fight. They were trying to destroy Malcolm. Satchel himself says that he was almost certainly gunned down by NOI rivals. So they played a role in killing him. Now, if the NOI knew about his gay past and were determined to destroy Malcolm, why wouldn't they have they released him? Released that information if they had it. In other words, this would have been, quote-unquote, powerful information for those who deemed it important. Satchel doesn't, of course, address that. And how this all sums up, exposes it. When he says there is not a single world-famous black person who is openly gay, young black lesbians and gays need a role model. Who better than Malcolm X? Well, first of all, since as Satchel was saying, that Malcolm really didn't discuss gay issues, and in Satchel's mind was more or less kind of like repressed anti-type of gay type of nationalistic individual on the issue of gays, then the fact that Malcolm quote unquote was gay or bisexual is completely irrelevant, because if he was gay or bisexual, he didn't address the particular issues. So what difference did it make? I mean, in other words, people who are black can look and see how Malcolm was inspired by being a black person in his black experience, and how he used that to transform his worldview about himself and the world. People who are Islam, or at least the Nation of Islam, can use that aspect of seeing how Malcolm came in and use that as how Malcolm's awareness about the Nation of Islam took him to that particular level. And then people who are Orthodox Islam can and do use that aspect of where Malcolm was evolving on his religious side, and say that that's what inspired him in that particular aspect. But if Malcolm was gay or bisexual, which to me is irrelevant, but if he was, Malcolm didn't outline any particular revolutionary or gay liberation outline or platform. So the fact that so if a fact came out that Malcolm was gay, then how does that fact work to inspire the issue of Malcolm as an icon? Because he never addressed a particular issue. So obviously, him being gay did not have the type of influence in the type of overall issues concerning the gay liberation struggle. Now, there are black people with stature avoids, like, or ignores, or maybe doesn't know about, like James Baldwin, who was at many times Malcolm's counterpart. Now, Baldwin, who often debated Malcolm and was a legendary writer, was openly gay and wrote about it in books like Giovanni's Room and stuff. So it's not like there aren't black gay icons who use not only their experience as a black person, but use their experience from being gay to outline their experience. Also, Bayard Rustin. This was King's confidant and the person who influenced King in going into this whole Gandhian approach, you know, the turn the other cheek and all that type of stuff. There's a documentary on Bayard Rustin. And Bayard Rustin was openly gay also. So Satchel talking about there's not a single world-famous black person who is openly gay. And since Malcolm is deceased, that's why I'm mentioning both... that's why I'm mentioning both Bayard Rustin and... Baldwin, even though they're both gone, because, well, so is Malcolm. So, within that same context, there seems to be some kind of other motivation, being played out, especially, when you have the fact that, you have, see, what this in part plays into is the aspect of Malcolm was on the down low. Now, we went through this before a few shows ago with this J.L. King, where it's this whole down-lowism, and it takes on a life of its own. So you hear Satchel say that there's no other, not a single world-famous black person who is openly gay. You know, now, Bayard Rustin, Baldwin, amongst others, were openly gay, and they were world-famous. They were known throughout the world. James Baldwin was met with open arms when he said, "I've had it with America. Let me get the hell out of here," and went to another country and stuff. Other countries embraced him and stuff. So it wasn't like he was not known throughout the world. So to play this Malcolm card and to pretend that it was just on the down low brings up all of this type of stuff that J.L. King was trying to imply, that cats have to keep it on the down low, otherwise they become discredited, or, you know, so on and so forth. Now, it's quite interesting that one of the persons who helped destroy people like Malcolm, King, the Panthers, the black liberation movement in general, was gay. Hoover. So, one person being gay or not doesn't determine their political discourse. That's why, in essence, I say it's irrelevant. Someone being gay is just someone being gay. It's where they take their politics from there. It's just like someone could be black and they could be a Colin Powell or Condoleezza Rice. It's where you take it from there at the end. So, Satchel needs to quit playing his particular card game. Hold on a second. Thank you. listening to all these various pigs fighting in the trough on Sam's plantation in the Age of Decline, it is no surprise that the type of rhetoric and path of least resistance is the same type of game that those who would create a hell on earth and those who would create a Klan museum would push through. Because after all, it's no shock that America is basically been turned into one big Klan museum. Of America the Beautiful and everything that it truly stands for, the Klan, short for Ku Klux Klan, you know, the popular American cross-burning group from the 1800s, has opened up its first Klan museum in Lawrence, South Carolina. Here you can see such legendary paraphernalia and memorabilia that has made the Klan such a well and liked and loved institution, like pictures of burning crosses, and better yet, pictures of black people's burning homes. And best yet, pictures of burning black people. Also, you can see some of the ropes on display. Ropes that made these gentlemen and some gentlewomen famous. Ropes that were used to lynch troublemaking black folks, and even non-troublemaking black folks. Just being black is often good enough. What's the saying? Find a Negro? Any Negro? Lynch a Negro. All that and more at the Klan Museum. You can also see on display artifacts like the American and Confederate flag being raised up in all of its glory, while at the same time they are raising us up by our necks with a rope. Concerning that Mahmoud Abdul-Rauf situation, not only would they have raised him up to his feet, but all the way up to the sky, or at least as high as the nearest tree. You can also see well-documented photos of the Klan members and fine and other fine Christian American craftsmanship on black people in the photo exhibit. And the finely crafted tools of the trade that the Klan used when they were engaged in the slicing off of the ears, gouging out of the eyes, and chopping off of the testicles and razor slitting of the lips of black people. Oh wait, to use their words, Negro brutes. Also, you can see on display the red-hot pokers and cattle prods that were used by our fine American Christian patriots to plunge in and sear the flesh of the descendant of Ham heathens. All that and more at the Klan Museum. Now, John Howard, the proud American God-fearing Klansman who opened up the museum, proudly has on his marquee that the museum is the first and world's only Klan museum. Even though I always thought that the House and Senate floor and the Congressional House of Congress and the White House itself were old Klan museums. Well, anyway, at least we know Klansmen are still in them. Remember old Hugo Black? Or as he was affectionately called, Klansman Black. No, wait. He was a Supreme Court Justice member. Anyway, you can see on display examples of what American capitalism has created with pictures of the Klansmen's organizations, sayings, and quotes, like black-white integration can't work because you're putting the incapable, of course, meaning black, beside the capable, of course, meaning white. Oh wait, that was ex-President Richard Nixon's statement. Well, you can definitely see the slogan one Klansman ran under stating, quote, segregation forever, unquote. No, wait, hold on. That was Senator Strom Thurmond's slogan. Anyway, you can see the strong, fiery Klansman owner who said, quote, I'd rather have a trained monkey working for me than a nigger, unquote. No, wait, that was baseball Cincinnati Reds owner Marv Schott. Well, you can definitely see the sharp, good to the last bite comment by the Klansman who said at the 1993 GATT conference about the African delegates that, quote, rather than eating each other, they can just come up and get a good square meal in Geneva, unquote. Nah, No, that was Senator Ernest Howey. Well, maybe we can see at the Klan Museum the response that was made by the Klansmen on the Larry King Show when a caller praised the Klansmen on September 15, 1995 for, quote, everything you've done to help keep down the niggas, unquote. The Klansmen replied, thank you, I think, quote, unquote. No, no, wait. That was Senator Jesse Helms. Well, you can definitely see the strong Klansmen institution, like the Klan restaurant chain, that all over the country stood strong in not serving and treating black people like human beings. Nah, hold on. I'm thinking of a Denny's restaurant. Actually, I was thinking about the other institution of Nazi-like science, where the Klan was using on unsuspecting kids, some perfectly healthy kids at that, by poisoning them with DNA terminating drugs. All in their war on AIDS game, right? Nah, that was just some regular doctors from areas in New York. Well, I guess that ties into the belief of the Klan that we can see at the museum that black inferiority is, quote, overwhelmingly likely to be genetic, unquote. Nah, that was respected New York City College professor Michael Levin. Oh, hold on a sec. It's getting kind of confusing. Well, we know some of the Klansmen, the Black College Association in 1993 had to call an investigation on when it was revealed that the Klan was trying to pass eligibility codes in the NCAA data analysis working group that would greatly restrict black athletes' access to college. Nah, those were just all American citizens working for the NCAA. I was thinking of the Klansmen who said to solve the black urban ghetto problem, just drop a bomb on them. Now, that was one of those cops on one of those cop shows. I got that mixed up with the Klansmen who took those words close to heart when they shot at an unarmed black man over 120 times, ripping up his block in Compton, California in the year 2005. Nah, that was just some more of LAPD's finest at their best. I got them mixed up with the Klansmen who said that black males should ride around with a nuclear bomb strapped to their back. Nah, I'm off again. That was Ted Turner. Well, you can also see the Klansmen who voted to have a dead black infant dug up and jackbooted out of the church cemetery when it was revealed that their dead infant had a black father. Nah, that was just some 7 Christian deacons at an all-American church. Well, there really doesn't seem to need to be a Klan museum, since in America is basically a living, walking, talking Klan institution. As the Klansmen-like book and bestseller, The Bell Curve, Rushton's Race, Evolution, and Behavior, and Ishtar's Decline of Intelligence in America, which blames it on you-know-who. Or D'Souza's The End of Racism, who says that segregation in the South was created to protect blacks. From who? The Klan? D'Souza. It didn't work. So if you want to see some of the Klan's work, just check it out at the Klan Museum. But if you're really into a massive human spectacle of a living, working, thriving, life-fulfillment, depriving Klan institution, just come to any town or city in America. They may go by different names, but the various lynching games are all the same. This has been Tracy James with a commentary. The Klan Museum, coming to a town near you. Out. Thank you.
to a tiny room. Go to the crime room. It's coming to a tiny room. It's everything that you dreamed of. It's everything that you imagined. It's all waiting right there for you at the wonderful American Klan Museum. Go see the Klan Museum, because we're going to be burning it down pretty soon. Go see the White House, because that slaves are going to be coming there too. And you know what the hell we're going to do.
Elephant on the hands of the townspeople because nobody would come to claim it. people were scared. In other instances, they would hire the black funeral parlor to come and take the body away. Many families were destroyed and fled after a lynching because mobs were not dissatisfied with the accused, the falsely accused in many cases, most cases, person. They would go to the cabin and find the wife, children, and kill them as well. The first image came quite by accident, a coincidence. Picker had purchased a roll-top desk out of a home in Macon, Georgia, and going through the papers found a postcard of Leo Frank in the bottom of the desk. And we didn't even have any idea what it was when we saw it. We wanted to claim it was an American. We kept looking at it because there was no identification on it. Maybe this is an American. Several years later, we got the lynching postcard of Laura Nelson, and that made us aware of the fact that there was a tradition of this type of photography as well as violence. Couldn't have believed it. You can't believe it. Just doesn't fit into our sensibilities today. We're determined, after John and I traveled and called to the different archives in the country and could not find a body of these images. And then we would show them to friends who came to the house who we thought could stand it. And in every case, irregardless of the age, no one had ever seen an image like it. So it made us aware of how suppressed this history was and motivated us to go and find them and build an archive. Well, I am. My friend John's in computers, and I'm a picker. I make my living finding rare and telling objects. So I used every method available to us. We took out ads in national papers, magazines, trade papers, photograph collectors, postcard journals. We got a toll-free number so that people could call us with any material. It's 888-211-1663. We got a website. We traveled to dozens of shows. We mailed out thousands upon thousands of flyers to anyone that we thought might eventually run into this material. And we went to a lot of gun shows and flea markets and distributed the flyers.
To see how suppressed this history can be. When you have pigs in a trough on the American plantation spewing out their decadence and art of deception. From Limbaugh to Novak to Robe to Boy George to Palmero, a disintegrated society that travels the path of least resistance, attacking gays, attacking women, etc., etc. We know we don't have to mention how they attack black. But then, for those who pretend that they are on the righteous path to address these social ills, they keep their aim quite narrow. From attacking Beanie Man in boycotts, but they skip past their little M&M and write articles about, is M&M gay? Is Malcolm gay? Well, the reality is that whatever people consider themselves, as long as the slave driver keeps thriving, none of us will fulfill our human potential. That's the real world. next time, slave vote.
Yeah.